Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Youth Ministry and Mentorship 101. I am talking with Pastor Brendan. He is a pastor in California for Brea Baptist. How are you doing today, Pastor?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing good. It's exciting to have somebody of your caliber on the podcast. don't get nervous on me, though. But let me just get right into it. Sure. Could you give us a little bit of insight of your history and what brought you to become a pastor and what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I spent much of my life, I grew up in the Catholic Church, fell away from that. You know how when you're 17, you got it all figured out in life, right? So fell away from that, was really heavy into the party life, was really like, when they talk about being like in and of the world, that was me. But that's for another podcast, my whole testimony. But you know, man, I got into ministry. I came back to faith, to God, and I got into ministry almost immediately. I just really felt like God was calling me to serve his church and to serve his kingdom. And so I actually got started in, my background is heavily in visual media, in brand strategy and visual media work. So I've done video production. I've done a little bit of audio. And then I've done some graphics, web, creative work. So I started interning at a church up in Central California, the House Modesto. They're an Assemblies of God church, huge church of 10,000 members. I started interning there. They offered me a full-time position within their media ministry as a creative director. Their lead pastor had a television show on the Hillsong channel called Back to the Altar. I was the creative director for that television show. We were able to reach 98,000 people a week through our media ministry. But during that, I had these very practical skills from the world and I really felt, I was meeting with a pastor and he goes, brother, I sit here and I talk to you, and he goes, I feel like God wants to really unlock your calling. And I feel like you're a pastor. I feel like you're just, I feel like God's just really putting that on my heart to mentor you and to train you up as a leader and things. I said, I had never thought of that. I was like, there's no way I'm a pastor. There's no way I would ever pastor. I started praying about it. My wife then came to me and was like, she goes, hey, I feel like I feel like this is on my heart that I need to tell you this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you too. Like, there's no way. And I pushed back on it. And finally, somebody was able to put it to me in terms that I could understand. It made a lot of sense. And I finally stopped fighting back on my calling. Mm. And after that, I left. I felt God was releasing me from media and then into more of like discipleship and connections. And so I helped with that ministry at that church for a short period of time. Then I moved the family down to Southern California, where my family is at. And then God really opened up the doors that needed to be opened. And here I am at Brea Baptist Church. It's funny, right? I came from this big charismatic mega church, right? Mm-hmm. This big assembly. I mean, you know how the Pentecostals get down, brother, right? And so I came from that. I got saved there. And now I'm in a church of 10,000, and now I'm serving in a pastoral role at a church of 130. A very conservative Baptist church. But we're in the middle of a lot of transition at our church here. God's doing some amazing things in our community. We've been able to really do some great things. So that's kind of the path that I'm on. And every day I've just learned that that there is a God, and that I'm not him, and that his plan is much better. And so I just really try to walk in that obedience every day. So I know that today I'm called here. I'm called to youth ministry. I'm called to this church. But I know that tomorrow is a new day, and tomorrow can bring a new anointing and a new calling. So I just really try to stay open to that. And that's a piece of advice for somebody out there. Maybe somebody needed to hear that too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that story is so powerful. And what I love about it is it's something that I've heard a lot on this podcast. A lot of pastors I've talked with, it's not something they just realize that they're a pastor. Yeah. It's somebody coming up to them and saying, I feel like this is something that God is calling you to. And at first there's a little hesitancy and stuff like that.
Always.
Yeah.
Always, because you know, the Bible does say that pastors will be judged twice over. And I think people sometimes take that out of context about how just because we've been called to pastoring that God is going to judge us twice. I think it's more so in context. It talks about that if we wrongfully lead the flock astray, knowing our position within the body, then we will pay double for that, right? For our own soul and for theirs, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of pressure there, right? Book of Hebrews 12:1 talks about having a great cloud of witness around you. And I think that no matter whether you're at a church of 130, you're at a church of 50, you're at a church of 10,000 or 60,000, you know, or you're a Hillsong pastor or whatever, that there's always eyes there, and that there's a big pressure there. And yes. I think that comes a lot. Our flesh takes over and we go, I don't want that problem. I don't want to be responsible for that. I want to sit in the church. I want to be an usher. I want to volunteer. I want to show up, and then during the week I can go do my thing and then come back and be refilled. And I think that so many of us push back on that. And I think that doesn't just go in pastoral ministry. I think that goes in any type of leadership, right? Yes. I think the word pastor is thrown around so much today that, you know, the Greek actually better translates into shepherd, and meaning leadership. You'll find that a lot of pastors have the spiritual gifts of they usually have one speaking gift, whether it's prophecy or evangelism or something like that, but they typically have the spiritual gift of administration, which means steering the ship, and they have of shepherding. And I think that that shepherding isn't the job of pastor, right? Mm. Pastor includes shepherding, but shepherd. And so, like, for instance, your ministry is you have this podcast, you have social channels that to where from what I understand is that you're trying to train people up and try to provide a place that people can learn how to navigate the world of youth ministry and youth mentorship. And I think that there's a special leader inside of you to do that, right? You're shepherding the people that look to you for that guidance. And so I don't want to mislead people on this whole idea of pastoring, right? And I think so many of us mislead ourselves at first and think that we got to be perfect. We got to be perfect because we have this title next to our name. And that's not true at all. You know, that's not true. We're sinners just like everyone else. So
Wow.
I'm going to hop off my soapbox now.
No, I loved it because it's interesting because I've been saying this as well. It's God will choose the most unlikely people to be pastors because he needs to show that it's God's work and not from the power of man. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. So it's really good to see and hear from you as well. Now, You engage with youth and young adults. What are the challenges of being a youth pastor in especially in the context of your denomination as a Baptist pastor? What are the challenges?
Sure. Yeah, you know, the challenges. I think regardless of what denomination we're a part of, I think that we're constantly competing with the world, right? Everything about the world is so about the flesh, and it appeals to that in such a great way. I mean, you look at name brand clothing, you look at movies, you look at music culture, you look at all of that, and it appeals to the emotions. It appeals to the now. It appeals to the self-gratification. I mean, I come from a background in branding and marketing, okay? The name of the game was to, how do we capitalize on that person's emotions? How do we capitalize on their almost their vulnerability, right? If you really think about it, that the world capitalizes on vulnerability, and where what we're trying to do in as ministries and in churches is we're trying to say, bring that vulnerability here, right? And then find strength in that vulnerability, but put that attention towards something better, something bigger, right? So really what we're doing is, and this goes into marketing in church is so similar, because what we're trying to do, especially youth ministry, I'm going to speak directly to youth ministry, is we're like the day trading, you know, stock market, right? We're day trading attention, you know, and we're right? How can we get if you're scrolling on Instagram or you're on TikTok or you're on Facebook or whatever platform you're using, how do you get somebody to stop scrolling? How do you capture their attention with the gospel, right? With the gospel message, enough for a 14-year-old to stop scrolling, watch your content over and over again, go to your profile, hit follow, and consume your content, right? And what we're competing with is we're competing with that account that's about fashion. We're competing with that account that's about you know, supercars, Lamborghinis, Ferraris, right? We're competing with, let's face it too, we're competing with that 22-year-old girl's account that doesn't have a lot of clothes on, right? And she's doing her thing, dancing to music and stuff like that. We're competing. I'm sorry, I did not put my phone on mute. I think we're trying to day trade time and attention, and really we're competing with all of these attention grabbers that do a really good job of capturing the average person's attention. So how do we present the gospel? How do we present Jesus in a way that is going to override or be louder or more effective than some of these other methods that have been tried and tested, you know, some of the greatest markets in the world? So that's one of the biggest challenges, is just holding these kids' attention, you know, is saying, hey, like, we get that faith is a hard thing to navigate, and right, and we're asking you to believe in something that you can't see, right? Mm. And we get that it doesn't make sense, and we get that 90% of your friends don't believe in it either, right?
Yeah.
We get that you're going to school and they're telling you that that doesn't exist, that this other thing exists, and so now we're competing with mixed messaging, right? And we're contradictory statements. And so how do we say, God's going to reveal himself to you in time, I just need you to be patient? How do you tell a 14-year-old kid, be patient, he'll show up, right? You see the tension there, right?
That, yeah.
I think that's really, it's holding these kids' attention, just like, hey, hang out for a little bit longer. And I think as the years go, it gets harder and harder, because back in the day, right? And I don't know, I wasn't really a church kid, you know, back in the day, and I'm only 32, right? But back in the day, it was, from what I understand, it was like, hey, we're gonna have a movie night, we're gonna pray, we're gonna talk about the Bible a little bit and eat some pizza, right? And that was it. And then all the kids get picked up, and that was it. Now though, in 2019, we're competing with phones, we're competing with media, we're competing with tablets and video game, we're competing with this human connection over video, right? We're competing with podcasts, right? We're competing with different forms of media that are very good at capturing kids' attention. And so where it was before, I hate to say it, but like, what else was there to do on, you know, on a Thursday night or a Wednesday night for these kids, especially, you know, it maybe in a small town or something like that? There's like, well, we play football and we go to youth group, right? Like, or we do scouts, or we do, right? But it was more focused around wholesome connection. Instead, now they can be consumed. They can consume content through mobile devices that we put in their hands from a young age. We're no longer in control of what they see or hear, right? And I was a product of that for sure, 100%. Like, my testimony is wild. It involves drugs and all kinds of wild stuff, right? And I was a product of that. I played into it in my business too. I fed off of it, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's really what we're trying to compete with. And I think you could probably survey 100 youth pastors around the country, and I think at least on their top 10 list of struggles of is going to be how they, you know, is that they're competing with attention. They're competing with the attention of the world. The world's very good at getting kids' attention, and churches need to do a better job of that.
Wow. Yeah. So going off on that, mm-hmm. you mentioned grabbing kids' attention, especially when they're scrolling on social media.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I reached out to you is because you are active on TikTok,
yeah.
which is a social media platform that is really what I would say Generation Z and very mm-hmm. young adolescents are using right now.
Yeah.
What inspired you to go on that platform, and how are you grabbing children's attention or teenagers' attentions on that
platform? So Gen Z, defined by the Pew Research Center, is like ages 7 to like 18, I think now, or something like that. It's actually, they're pretty young now, Gen Z. I was a big Instagram user. Okay. And like I said, my background was in digital marketing and social media content creation and things like that. So, I've always had a love for different forms of media and social media and things like that. I always found the concept of digital evangelism to be very interesting. Now churches are coming out with digital campuses, things like that. So one day I downloaded TikTok. I strictly just wanted to, I was actually at church. Don't tell anybody. It was during first service. We have two services here right now. And during first service, I was standing outside in the patio area, and I decided to download TikTok just to see what it was all about. And in fact, I'm newly the youth pastor, by the way. I'm coming out of the connections pastor role into youth and young adults. And so I was standing outside and I download TikTok. I was like, what is this all about? Right. Mm-hmm. And at first it seemed kind of annoying. And I think it was mostly annoying because I couldn't figure it out. And so I was watching stuff. I was like, oh, so this is pretty funny, you know? And then it kind of dawned on me that I was like, well, maybe this might be beneficial. So I made a TikTok with one of our former staff members here. And it was simply, we have these banners outside of our church, and it says, three of them say, love God, love people, serve the world. That's our motto here. That's our mission. So love God, love people, serve the world. And so he was off in the distance, and he turns the corner with his hands out like this, like he's going to give me a hug. And so I filmed it, right? And it was just a POV first person and of him just walking up to me and hugging me. And I put a secular song with it, and it was I forget what it was. I think it was, I don't know, I have to look it up, but it was a sad song, right?
Yeah.
And I put a black and white filter over it, right, to make it that much more dramatic. And I just I typed in like the trending hashtags and then some Christian hashtags, and because I understood hashtag culture and things, so I just put those in. And next thing you know, within the next like 3 days, it had like 30,000 views on it.
Wow.
And remember,
wow.
I think the only person that was following me was my wife at that point. So I had like one follower, right?
Yeah.
And I said, hey, this is crazy stuff that you can have no followers and you can go viral. Not to say that my 30,000 views was viral, but for me, that was mind blowing, because on Instagram, you're not going to get 30,000 views off yes. of when you have one follower. The algorithm is different, right?
Yeah.
So then I really started exploring. I made a couple more. I actually made like four that day because I got like super laser focused. I made like four of them, and some of them did better. Some of them did okay. And then the next day I put out a TikTok, and bear with me because I'm going to open it up right now.
Because
I think it was, if we're going to talk about this, I made a TikTok that was, it was a gospel message. It was just, hey, Jesus loves you. Right. And it got like 1,000 views. I was like, okay. So then I put out another one the next day, and that one got 72,000 views. Right.
Wow.
And then I decided to go back to making dumb videos, right, where it was me and the guy just sitting there, literally just dancing to a song, and it got like no love at all. But then after that, it was like I mean, I was starting to get, I just stuck with the gospel messages, and I was bringing it. I just studied who the user was. And I said, hey, a lot of these kids that are on here, you know, they need to hear a message. And so I said, this could be very beneficial. And then I just kind of got obsessed with it. And then I started utilizing live streams. And I mean, I don't know if you want to go through the whole sequence of what we're doing now on TikTok and what we're doing, what we're moving towards in the future with it. But next thing you know, I just, the followers started growing, the views started growing, comments, things like that. And I think my number one TikTok right now has 86,000 views on it. And it's just about, and it just talks about, I have a one liner that I use and it just says, there's nothing you can do to make God stop loving you because there's nothing that you did to make him start loving you. And I just said that and I just reaffirmed, hey, there's nothing you can do about it. God loves you. Too bad if you don't like it, right? That's pretty much what I said. I put some music over it and it has 530 comments, 23,000 likes. I mean, I couldn't believe, but it just shows you the hunger, right? Yes. And that's really what it was. It wasn't so much about the metrics. The metrics showed me that it was about the hunger and that I've got, you know, I've got 14-year-old kids on here that are like asking questions about what's the difference between God and Jesus or the tough questions, you know, hey, what does the Bible say about this, about, you know, about marriage or about premarital sex or anything like that. And I think that they gravitate towards, cause I do a lot of stuff on live. I think they gravitate towards that because I don't shy away from it. I'll answer it with truth, but age appropriateness too. Right. Yeah. With the quorum, but, so to answer your question, I know that's kind of a roundabout way of talking about it, but to answer your question, it was an accident.
Wow.
Out of pure curiosity, one day I just downloaded the app and made some stupid videos. and then eventually the media mind kicked in and I said, hey, how can I use this to promote the gospel? Because I was noticing that Facebook and Instagram, the reach was very much more less organic and more paid reach stuff.
Yes.
And believe it or not, pastors don't make crazy amount of money and our budgets aren't entirely huge. So but then I realized what the free, with the algorithm, with the organic reach on TikTok was like, and so that's why I decided to run with TikTok. So,
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why I'm really covering this story because I think, especially in my own denomination, we're not using it, and the reach is amazing. I think that's and it's amazing to see, you know, pastors like yourself just utilizing it and reaching a lot of people and seeing that teenagers are, they have that hunger and they're asking the tough questions, which is another question I do have. When they ask those difficult questions, you say you come up with honesty and you know you're age appropriate, but how do you, you know, when it's really, really a difficult one, maybe you don't even know the answer yourself. How do you approach that with a young person?
So I think kids now are getting smarter and smarter, right? They know lies when they hear them. Exposure to things has really, you know, really played into that. I think that the first thing is that 1 Corinthians 16:14 says, do all things out of love, right? And so I think if we start there and we know that, hey, no matter what question they're coming with, what problem they're coming with, if what we're doing, what we're saying is coming from love, love always wins, right? So I think we start there. Secondly, we have to be secure enough with ourselves as adults and as pastors, as ministers, as leaders, to be okay with the answer, I don't know. And I think that, I think a lot of leaders aren't comfortable saying that. I know at first it was kind of like, for me, like, I don't know, how do I deal with that? Right. But I think that kids will appreciate, and I know, and I've done it, you know, and that where they ask a question, I say, you know what? I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. But I tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to find an answer for you and we'll come back to this tomorrow or next week and I'll have some answers for you. And we can talk about it more. I think we have to be okay with that because we want to have answers for everything, and we're not perfect, and we're not all knowing. And so we have to be okay with that. We have to be okay because the more we're confident in saying, I don't know, the more confident the kids are going to be in accepting that answer temporarily. We can't just push it off. We got to be men and women of our word and come back and say, okay, here's your answer. But I think that it also allows the kids to explore a little bit more and fosters an environment of it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to mess up. And it's okay to explore that.
Wow.
Right. They look to their leaders. And so if they say, hey, you know what, my leader, he didn't always know everything, but, and I think that alleviates a lot of pressure from them, or that's on them. Right. So, as far as like, if I do have an answer, it's about understanding your audience, about understanding in context, who am I talking to, right? And let's face it, that like the church is full of different people, different socioeconomic statuses, different races, different different backgrounds, different places in their faith, right? Some kids are not saved, some are on fire for God, some others aren't, right? There's kids from the hood, there's kids from the beach, there's kids from the suburbs, right? And I think especially I'm from Southern California, so we kind of get a little bit of everything around here, right? But I think it's about knowing that person, knowing, being invested in the kids and knowing that, hey, like I know this kid Adam, he loves, you know, he's like, for him it's Jesus and basketball, right? And I know that his favorite player is LeBron James, and so I might reach him through that. And I might, you know, if he comes with a hard question, I might utilize his loves, right? His love of basketball to minister to him. And I think that that's a classic like youth pastor thing, but it is so effective, and it works with adults too. If I know this guy loves golf, I've done it. I know this guy loves golf, but I know I need to talk to him because there's something going on there in his life. And I need to minister to him. Hey brother, let's go play the back nine over here at this golf course. Because now you're taking the topic, whether it's the environment that you're in physically or the topic of the conversation, and you're making it less threatening, right? You're making it less, right? There's nothing more awkward than a 32-year-old or 40-year-old dude sitting down talking to a 14-year-old kid about sex, right? Or about, hey, you shouldn't be doing that with your girlfriend, or hey, like what's going on here? Oh, hey, you know what? Pornography probably isn't the best look, brother, right? Like, right, that's awkward to them, right? Especially at that age, they don't want to hear that. But if you can use their loves to minister to them and to reach them, again, I know it's kind of cliche to say, you know, oh, you know, right, the classic youth pastor sermon always has illustrations of about the world and things like that, but I think it works for adults too. I think if I'm going to go hold my brother accountable for something, right, but I take him to go play golf, it's coming from a place of communion and fellowship rather than a place of like sitting him down at my desk and saying, right now he feels like he's being counseled. He's like, I'm almost checking him, you know? So I think that that's a really effective way to do it. And I think that, I think that, also letting these kids know that you're not perfect, not only through like, hey, I don't know the answer, but if you do have an answer, saying like, hey, being vulnerable in your own life, being like, hey, you know what, dude, like when I was 16, I got drunk too. I did this, I did that, right? And I went through it. Trust me, this leads down bad road, right? Like, and then now they've got firsthand account. And boldness, I think the last thing is just boldness, is just knowing that what we're playing for here, right? Everyone refers to it as the game, right? Oh, you've been in the game. But I think that we've got people's souls on the line here, right? Where are they spending eternity? And with that, right? I would say that if you had the cure for cancer on a piece of paper, and I had cancer, you would because of who you are, right, in your nature, you would want to run as fast as you can to give everybody, or to give me that paper. Here's the cure for cancer, right? And I think that we have the cure. We have the cure for eternal condemnation. And so that has to override our fear, the fear of God versus the fear of man. Don't get me preaching, we'll go to church here. But the fear of God versus the fear of man, right?
Yeah.
And I think, and kids can be intimidating, let's face it, right?
Yes.
They can be intimidating. What's funny about that is I tell my wife this all the time. My wife is our kids' ministry director. I tell her all the time, I'm like, I'd rather preach to 500 adults on a Sunday morning than preach to 20, you know, second graders. You know, they scare me, but they're intimidating. And I think that, but having that boldness, that knowing that, okay, what is the ultimate goal here? The ultimate, yeah. Keeping your eyes on that. I think that's really the key.
Awesome. Awesome. What I love about that answer is the fact that you say you will use their loves to reach them. Mm-hmm. And I think usually the cliche that we get mixed up is that we have that youth pastor go up and say things that are of the world, and it, you know, he brings up the rap songs and he brings up fame, and then it's like, ah, oh, here comes the youth pastor saying those things again. I think what's different from what you're saying is that you know that young person. So mm-hmm. when you're bringing up the world, it's not in a, I'm cool, I know what's happening in the world. It's, I know who you are. And because I know who you are and I care about you, I know what you like and I'm trying to reach you. So
100%. It's all about connection, right? Like I can put on the Jordans and the skinny jeans, right? And the long tee and right, and have the haircut and all that, right? And the tat. I'm tatted up, brother. I got tats all down. But I can have all that. But kids are so smart, man, and they long for something more. They're smart. They know a fraud when they see one, right?
Yeah.
They know if, like, oh, this, look at this dude. He's just clowning. Like he's trying to be something he's not, right?
Yeah.
And they can see right through that. And so I think being authentic and knowing, you know what, like brother, like I care about you. You know what I mean? Like you're not just a number, a butt in the seat to me, right? You're not just another family member that ties out at the church, right?
Yeah.
Like you're like, I care about you. You know what I mean? And you're part of this family, right? And I think that's really what it comes down to, is the kids know when you're connected and when you're not, or when you're just getting, right? Let's face it, a lot of people get their start in youth ministry, right? Mm. Kids, and so they know if you're just kind of like, you're just on a stepping, you know, on a platform just to get to the next thing, right? They know when you're invested, they know, right? They're smart. They know these things, especially in the junior high school world, man. They know when, like, who is this dude, right? But if you said, yes, it's about knowing, right? Because I can go up and make an illustration about LeBron James, right?
Yeah.
But if nobody in my youth group likes basketball, what's the point?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I know that if I go up to Ricky and I'm like, yo, Ricky, like, And I'm ministering, but I'm using Xbox, right? Or I'm using sneakers. I'm a huge sneakerhead, right? I got Jordans and all kinds of, way too many pairs of shoes. But I love sneakers, and I know this other kid loves Jordans and Yeezys and all that stuff, right? It's a personal interest. He knows not only am I getting the message through to him, but he also knows that I'm personally invested in his interest, right?
There you
go. And that's, I think, that's the biggest thing, is it comes down to one word and one word only, and that's connection. That is 100% connection.
Wow. Awesome. And you mentioned something that this podcast is always trying to teach against, which is youth ministry is not just the stepping stone into ministry. Yeah. Youth ministry is ministry, period. That's something I used to say at the end of every episode.
Yeah.
And that's what this podcast is about. So, because youth ministry is reaching young people who are in need of hearing the gospel, and we have to take it seriously. It's not just something that you're here to just do for 2 years, get promoted, and then move on, because these young people need that strong connection, as you said.
Well, it's calling too, right? It's calling. It's about walking in that obedience in your calling. If God's calling you somewhere, you go, right? He said in the Bible, it says, go into the world and preach the gospel to all of creation, not just go into your local neighborhood and preach the gospel to everybody 18 and up, right? He said, go into the world, meaning don't stay here, leave somewhere, go outside of your comfort, right? And preach to everybody, every last bit of creation. So it's the Great Commission, right? So
yeah, definitely. Pastor Brendan, I thank you so much for being on the podcast and to giving great insight. As I usually do on this podcast, I leave it to the guest to say the last word. And basically what the last word is, any words of encouragement to somebody who may be in Southern California, who is hearing the call to ministry but is afraid to do so, what would you say?
I would say ministry is hard. It's hard, but the hardest part is to step out in that faith and just remember that there's nothing that can ever override and is more, nothing that's ever, there's nothing more important than walking in the obedience to God. And as you have obedience, God will bring provision. So meaning, I don't know if I got to leave my, you're asking me to leave my cushy desk job with benefits and things like that, or you're asking me to leave this or that, the security of a pension, things like that. Again, I'm a living testament to it that with obedience comes provision. And with that, if you're going into youth ministry, I think one piece of advice would be to, in order to minister to kids, you gotta have the kids. In order to reach the kids, you gotta go where they exist. And that's why I use social media. That's why I use the things that I use. And I invest time into them, real time and effort into them, because you have to exist where they exist. So if you're feeling like God's putting this on your heart to do this, you can reach out to me. I'm sure you can reach out to my brother here and really go where God's calling you, because in the end, you'll see the fruits of that labor and you'll see the provision for that obedience.